From the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth, Michael Opping speaking about Conjoined by artist Roxy Payne.
I mean, it is, in terms of this particular piece of architecture and the way the building is sited on this piece of land, I mean, anybody with half a brain would say, I want to put my thing there. And I'm not just talking about, you know, unknown people writing. I won't go into the names, but they're very, very big names saying, Michael, you know that my ex would look great there. And of course, it would. Any number of things could look good there. But when we built this building, we provided to Dow Ondo with a pre-architectural program. And what you do with a pre-architectural program is tell them what your goals are in regards to this museum without telling them how to achieve those goals, because that's what you're paying them X million dollars to do. You don't tell somebody how to make their art. And so it has to be almost vague but specific at the same time. And one of the things we asked for, well, there were a number of things we asked for. One was we asked for a water feature. We asked for a natural condition. And we asked for a place where you didn't have to look at art all the time. And Ondo, we had a competition. There were five architects in the competition. Ondo won hands down. And Ondo provided us with this beautiful pond, it's almost an acre, that's about 2 feet deep. And he thought of this idea when we were writing this, we thought, what's really important here is that not just that it's a place where you don't have to look at art, but it's a place that sort of cools your mind down. I mean, Texas can be so hot, and even if you can't feel the water or be in the water, the presence of water would be very important. And the presence of nature would be very important in creating a special little enclave here. In other words, a place where people go regardless of the art, right? And so Ondo built what he called an arbor for art. And from the time the building was built, I thought, I really need to address that. And that whatever sculpture is put out on these grounds, and hopefully there'll be very little. Just as in the galleries, the idea is, the more you put out here, the worse it's going to look. You don't want this to look like a junked up backyard with a lot of stuff out here. Choose the right thing. And in these kinds of situations, my theory is that it's really not about the artist. It's about the piece. So a lot of people will tell you, you have to put a Richard Serra out there. Or you have to put an Ellsworth Kelly out there. Or you have to put a Mark de Souvre out there. And they do make great art. But, it's about being a Mark de Souvre. And what we really needed was something that was in keeping with this idea of an arbor for art. So, I resisted putting anything out here for 6 years. And at one point, and I had told the board, maybe we should just plant more trees. Do we really need more art? I mean, if we're going to make an arbor here, why not just leave it alone? And there have been many suggestions also by artists to put art in the pond, which I hope never happens in my lifetime. I would never want to see that happen. The water has its own personality. It creates a different psychology on the different days when the weather changes. But at any rate, I had been looking at Roxy Payne's work for a number of years and had never really thought of him as someone who would be appropriate for this. Until I saw this tree, this particular tree. And he has done more than one tree. He has done, I think, about 25 trees total, large-scale trees. He's 42 years old. He was born in New York, but he grew up in the suburbs of Virginia. He basically dropped out of high school and then went back to college after completing some classes. He's a very interesting guy. He's a really a good guy. He's one of these. He's almost. He was meant to be an artist. I mean, he wasn't meant to study anything. He was meant to make things. He was meant to make things with his hands. When I first became aware of his work, he was making these things he called replicants. And what they were basically weeds, poppies, and psilocybin mushrooms. They were plants related to drug taking. And he's always been fascinated by sort of outsider plants, not the beautiful tree that you see in a particular setting, but plants that are sort of on the fringe of the plant world. He's done a number of replicants of weeds, and they are precise, really, really precise. You can't tell them from the real thing. And he makes them out of cloth and plastics and various materials. And he'll do a whole field of them, you know, a 20-foot by 20-foot field of poppies that look exactly like poppies growing in the ground. Then he started making these trees. And one of the key things that ideas that runs through Roxy's work is this balance or dichotomy, however you want to describe it, between the organic and the mechanical. And he likes to confuse the two. He likes to look at mechanical things and transpose them into the organic world. And he likes to look at organic things and transpose them into the mechanical world. He also has these machines which make abstract sculpture. And they're basically, they spit out this brightly colored goo that looks very, very organic. But they're made by this machine, and he has this complicated computer stuff. And if you look him up on a website, I'm sure it'll talk about these sculptures. Let me talk a little bit about how this is made, because how it's made has a fair amount to do with what he thinks it means. So these two trees are made out of stainless steel. Now, stainless steel is stainless. That's why they call it stainless steel. And it's great for outdoors because it doesn't absorb air, it doesn't absorb liquid, it presumably does not rust or corrode. Each trunk weighs about 7,500 pounds. And the entire tree is made of parts. Now the trunks are made of, they start out as sheets about this thick of stainless steel, which he brings into his studio, and then he has a large and very powerful machine of rollers, and he rolls the trunks himself. One of these rollers costs $20,000 each, and he has to have two of them to do this. So the trunks, all the way up to about, 20 feet, 25 feet, those are rolled in his studio. He forms the shape of the trunk himself. The branches are tubes that he purchases. He buys these tubes, they're also stainless steel, in various diameters. And this kind of tubing is used for a variety of things. Seldom is it used to make a sculpture of a tree. But it is used to transfer waters and liquids. It's used in plumbing. What he does is then he takes a different kind of roller to twist and bend those. So those are, the branches are basically industrial tubing. The whole thing is made from an industrial process. And what he likes is the fact that These pipes that could be used in plumbing that transfer various liquids throughout society are very similar to the veins and pipes in a plant that transfer liquids from the ground up through the plant. So he's just taking the industrial world and applying it to the organic world. Now, the two trees grow together. And I asked him how he came up with this idea. And he said basically that some time ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, he was hiking somewhere and he saw a tree that had, the branch had grown out and then grown back into itself. And the image never left him. And so he started working on this piece. It started from a series of drawings and eventually developed into this. So if you ask him, did you want it to look like a tree? He would say, yes, absolutely, I want it to look like a tree. But I'm not trying to fake anything here. I don't want anything to think, oh, that's a tree, but it's made out of steel. I want them to know that it's made out of steel and that it's a tree. I mean, he's very, very clear about that. It's not a trompe l'oeil kind of a thing. It's not a like fake the eye. You know, he wants you to know that there is this industrial thing out there that somehow has morphed into looking organic without being a tree. And stainless steel was developed because it doesn't absorb air and because it doesn't corrode, it's the kind of a material that could potentially last forever, which nature never lasts forever. I mean, it's always changing and morphing. So this is like the perfect nature. It's like a tree that will never corrode, that will never die. It will stay exactly the same. Why don't I take some questions now? Because I'm going to start just repeating the same information, because that's basically what those two trees are about. Yeah.
The trunk is one piece, or is it several?
Good question. Each trunk is made out of about 33 pieces of steel, which are then welded together. That's a good question. So he brings these sheets of stainless steel in, and he rolls them into shapes and then fits them together like a puzzle. And if we were standing next to it, although you can't really see the welds anymore, you can see where they're sectioned. So I think each trunk is around 33 pieces, give or take.
In the installation, does he specify how it should be installed, say, with direction or prevailing?
We spent a lot of time deciding. I mean, how it would go, and we both had a lot of input into that because it's such a prominent site. It has to be perfect. And you can't move that further to the left or to the right.
I saw it in New York, but I didn't remember it being two trees. I thought that I just remember looking at the one. It was very close to the sidewalk.
Uh-huh. It was two trees.
It's totally out of context with the rest of the sculptures they have, which are mostly individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, we were very precise about the placing of this. That one of the things is that when I first invited Roxy out and we talked about this site, and we actually put markers in the ground where it would go, and then it took us a while to hammer out the contract and costs and this and that, how much it would cost to bring it from New York and construction, labor costs. When he came out about 2 months before we actually installed it, that building wasn't there when we originally did it. Let me put it that way. And he was stunned. And actually, I was too. Even though I knew a building was going to go there, I had no idea what building. And it didn't really affect how we sited the piece, though, at the end of the day. At the end of the day, the siting of the piece has to do with just placing it right there in that V, in this sort of little theater, this little green theater. And it's not trying, the arc is not trying to capture anything. It's just there. And my idea was that I'm hoping that people will now go out there more. And there is a fantastic view. If there is a frame in this, the view is from the back of the sculpture, because from behind the sculpture it frames the pavilions, and it's really stunning. It's been windproofed. The strong winds. It's up to like 65, 70 miles an hour winds. There's not a problem with it. 70 mile an hour winds, that's a lot of wind. Could a tornado take it apart? Sure, it could take this building down. What was the other one? Lightning. It's grounded. It is grounded. And so it's not going to be the first thing that lightning gravitates towards. And if it does, it shouldn't affect it. It was in New York for a year and a half. And they have a lot of lightning there, a lot of lightning strikes, and it wasn't a problem. The wind is not a big problem with this, I say that, knock on wood, because basically there's so much space between the branches. It's not like it's catching, it's not like a catcher's mitt.
Does it move in the wind?
I'm sure it does, a little bit.
Is it framed by the concrete on the patio? In other words, what do you see when you're sitting on the patio out there through the...
You can't see
can you see it at
the cafe,
all?
Blocks it.
It really, we really didn't sight it with that in mind. We sighted it with these pavilions in mind, and with the grand lobby in mind.
Okay.
And
how do we get there? You said you hope people...
You go through the restaurant.
Okay.
You go through the restaurant. I mean, there's another way, and we may, there's another path that you can use to get there. And we just put the grass in. Don't try to go for a while, because it's really muddy out there, and it's going to be for a little while. But we may demarcate a little pathway.
The idea would be that people will go out there.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead. Pardon me? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we don't have the sprinklers squirting water on it just because it's just asking too much. There's chemicals in the water. So even though it doesn't absorb liquid, there's stuff in the water that will get on the surface of the sculpture. But it can be touched. I mean, I wouldn't, as a docent, I wouldn't encourage it. But I mean, you don't have to tell them not to, and certainly you don't want to climb it. I mean, I had to make sure,
Do you plant any more larger trees? Background, say, up between it, down on the other side of the wall?
Don't know yet. Let's wait and see how big Fort Worth gets, and how many, it's sort. Right now, it's sort of crazy to do anything until we see what else is happening around here.
Dark spots on the tree.
Yeah, it's mine. It's like a patina on the left one.
Are they shadows?
Those are shadows.
At the bottom?
They change.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's
I think
dark
that,
spots that kind of...
What's that? I will. There is no patina on stainless steel.
Okay.
There's just shadows. And Terry asked about lighting, and the thing about Roxy's trees are that there should never be lighting. I mean, the stainless steel is chosen because it kind of attracts its own light, and it really looks great on gray days like this. At night, I wouldn't say it shines, but it has you don't want this to look like a cheap Christmas tree outside of somebody's house, And that's why lighting tends to be so artificial and so dramatic that it ruins most sculpture, quite frankly, artificial lighting. But so there will not be any lighting on it whatsoever, just the natural light of the moon or the natural light of the sun.
Was it for sale?
It was for sale and we bought it. It was for sale, this is the kind of thing, it took him a long time to make it. And I had seen it in the studio. And I had said that we might be interested in it, and we had this site. So basically what I negotiated early on is what I would call a first right of refusal. So when it became available, you know, and they started pushing on this to sell it. Well, what was up in New York, there were a lot of people interested in it. And so the dealer had to come to me and say, there are a lot of people interested in it. When do you think you would...
So it wasn't meant to be a permanent installation in New York?
No.
Okay.
No, it was not.
Were some of the branches between the trees continuous?
Yeah. Absolutely. Right into each other. They're welded together. The two trees are literally connected together. And that's hence the title, Conjoined.
Not all, are they?
Not all of them, I think.
Okay. So if they're not loose, it's hanging out.
No.
Okay.
No.
You know, in the article, when it was installed in Madison Square, it really needed some reconstruction to make it work. He's got a big enough studio that it was up in the studio?
No.
Never.
It was always in parts.
So that was the first place it was up, and it had to be reconstructed.
Yes.
I imagine that he has to be down and reconstructed here.
Oh, yes. He did all of the welds.
Yes.
Every single weld, every single connection of every single branch was welded by Roxy.
Can you comment on this in the age of minimalism? Mm-hmm. I realize this is obviously very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, to conceive, but to make.
Well, to him, it's a handmade thing, even though he uses machines. I mean, he relies on a lot of machines to make this. You know, he's a quote-unquote hands-on guy. I mean, and he's just so obsessive about it. At some point, I told him he's going to have allow studio assistants to do these, or he'll go crazy. But, you know, it's very important to him that he do each of these welds. When it was first installed at Madison Square Park, all of this stuff had been mapped out on paper, but had never been connected. When it was connected in Madison Square Park, and they actually made detailed notes of where they're connected and made little markings and tags on each of the branches so that, you know, you didn't have to just go, you know, because it's pretty, the branches are pretty detailed.
So the work was not commissioned for the site?
No.
All right, and secondly, did the titles come in afterwards as they...
I think this title came to him. They don't come afterwards in his case. They usually come in the making. And I think this probably came in the making of some drawings that he did. And the drawings are remarkably similar to the final thing. They're not like abstract or anything. They're remarkably crystal clear as to what the final thing was going to be. They were. To keep it, it's like a I don't know what the real name of it is, but it's almost like a silicone. It's just to keep stuff off of it, to keep it from gathering stuff, and to keep it very, very tightly sealed. And it gave it a slight brightness. Just gives it a slight brightness. It's a translucent, almost it's transparent coating, basically. Okay. Yeah.
Computer software to design these, fit them together?
No, not these. He uses computer software a lot, but not for these. These are done from drawings. I was surprised at how traditional. I mean, how he carefully drew the trunk. And how he carefully drew each branch in. I mean, they're very simple little drawings. There's about five or six of them, but just done very carefully, and just sort of he kind of discovers the connections as he goes in the drawing.
Did we get any of the drawings with the acquisition?
No, they're owned by, you know, they're drawings that they're so simple they're almost not. It's a funny breed of drawing. I think I'm illustrating one in this month's calendar. They're somewhere between a working drawing or a mechanical drawing and just a freehand idea drawing. They're in a funny zone. But there's a model of this that is very, very beautiful, that it's about this high off the ground and about this wide. But it's already owned by someone in Colorado, I think. But maybe it's made out of stainless steel.
It's just like this one.
Exactly like this one. We actually had it shipped here and set up at the base to refer to. Yeah. So. The welding material? Yeah. Yeah.
I have another read on this, too, is that, you know, it's organic, but it also has that anatomical capillary bed.
Yes.
He
does. It's hard to get a lot of stuff out of Roxy. And I mean, we talked mostly. I did a long interview with him, and a little bit of that interview will be in this month's calendar. But most of the interview, we just talked about taking drugs because we got off track and talked about the things that are really most fun. I mean, there's a lot of references here. I mean, you know, there it's like two humans coming together. When you call it conjoined, there's a sort of a romantic element that I wouldn't usually associate with Roxy Payne. I also imagine that, you know, if all the branches are like that together, that all of the roots are the same, that they would all be connected together into one giant loop, you know.
Okay.
Exactly. And like you say, the capillary system of the human body. But that relates to like how all of our, you know, all of our sewage and water is transferred throughout the city. I mean, that's, you know, industrial piping is used to do all of that. And there's a different kind of piping that we have in our body and a different kind of piping that plants have. So there are all these sort of overlapping metaphors.
There was a suggestion in one of these little essays that one of these dominates the other, that one is withered and one is strong. Do you get that feeling?
No, I don't get that. I mean, I don't get that. It's more like a dance to me where, you know, no one's necessarily dominating. They're just moving with each other.
Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you think of that? And he said, well, they're fighting.
Uh-huh. I'm sure people will come up with a ton of things. Well, thank you all for coming.
Oh, yeah.
They're set on two. They're amazingly deep. The concrete is like 16 feet deep. 16-foot deep piers. And then they're bolted to the top of these 16-foot deep piers. So it isn't coming over. I mean, you could, I don't think a bulldozer could. Yeah, bolts, but you can't see them. Okay, yeah. No, he has not. Good question, he hasn't. Has Ondo seen it? Yeah, it's probably time now. I think he'll be very pleased. I think. Who knows? Yes. Every single one. There is not a free limb.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about your consideration of it in relationship to the architecture? Well, wait, our building or those buildings?
No, our
building. Oh, just that, you know, I wanted to cite it so that when you looked back from the interior of that V wall, that you see the pavilions framed by this arch. Because I remember that when we were building the building, And you may note that almost all of the great architectural photographs you see of this building are taken from over there. And there's a reason for that. When this building was being built, you know, there was no pond. And really, the construction trailers were behind that wall. Every time I visited, I came there, I parked there, and I walked over here. And everyone got used to seeing these pavilions. The front of the building hadn't been done. And so there's an idea of this building that exists from there, that people who have never gone out there never think of that. But if they go out there now with this, they'll see that these pavilions are like framed by this arch. Okay, thanks. In relation, exactly.
Exactly.
Have you considered thanks. A taller species of trees throughout
there? Well, yeah, we've considered a lot of things. But, you know, we just have to wait and get this building done. I mean, you can't, you know, you can't stop the city from growing. And there's going to be a bunch of buildings over there. And we'll see what it ends up looking like. Just, you know. Well, there's going to be another larger, like a wedge-shaped building out there that is going to have a reflective surface on it. So who knows what it's going to look like. And those trees, those big trees, cost a lot of money. And also, the other problem, too, is that those big, tall trees, like that big one out there, if we were to try to buy some of those, they can't be planted on the other side of that wall. There isn't enough support surface to dig with a root system that big and that deep, and it's also at an angle. It can't be done.
And they would die because there's too much concrete.
There's, exactly, that's what I'm saying. You can't, so that's that.
How far down into the ground in
the pier is about 16 feet deep.
Okay.